I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. Back in the days when Arizona was being greened with new golf courses and Florida condos began to outnumber the mangroves and beach shacks, all we ever heard about were the golden years, that wonderful time after age 65, when we too would have made our contribution to society and saved enough money to finally have a life of genuine leisure. Oh, the golden years.
Paging store associate Dick Gordon, aisle 7, please. Clean up on aisle 7. Store associate Dick Gordon, aisle 7.
All right, so much for the golden years. The fact is that more and more older citizens are a part of the working world. Some because they never leave it, and many, it turns out, because they want to or have to return. And what's more, it turns out that a number of major companies, CVS Pharmacies and Home Depot and Borders and others, are now actively recruiting those who we thought would be golfing or fishing or playing bridge. This hour, we're asking why. Are most of these older workers being forced back into harness by their own economic circumstances? Is it a lack of health care? Or are people going back to work because the golden years aren't so golden? Is retirement boring? Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And we're going to start today with Stephen Wing. Stephen is in charge of government programs for CVS Pharmacies, joining us on the line from Woonsocket, Rhode Island. Steve, it's good of you to be with us.
Thank you for inviting me to come on your show today.
I understand that your company has considerably increased the number of older workers just in recent years. Is that company policy?
Well, it's we went back to 1999. We found that at that time we had less than 7% of our workforce was over 50. And we knew that we needed to do something there, and we worked with our managers and talked to them about the benefits of hiring older people, and they all agreed. They said, heck, we want to hire older people, but where are they?
Well, hang on a second. Now, what is the benefit of hiring an older person or older people for the program?
Well, they bring a wealth of knowledge, the work ethic, customer service skills that are very hard to find these days, and we see this as an untapped resource for us.
Huh. So 7%. Now, where are you now, 6 years later?
We're now at over 17% of folks over 50 years old. And in fact, we've tracked this on a yearly basis now. And in January of 2005, we have two people in their 90s working for us. And 2 years ago, we didn't have anybody in their 90s. So we see that probably in the next 10 to 15 years, we would not be surprised to see that we won't have people in their hundreds working for us. And those two people in their 90s, they are pharmacy technicians for us, doing a great job. And they love what they're doing, and they've done a great job, and they want to work.
The interesting thing about this, Steve, is that it sounds very much like a simple business decision, not a matter of community or goodwill here.
Most definitely, this is a business decision that we've made, and some of the side benefits are that it is showing community involvement. What we want to do is we want our stores to look, and when customers walk in, they want to be able to see themselves. And so that's why the population is aging. So we want the stores to have older people in them so that customers feel comfortable when they come in the store. And another benefit that you were asking about, we find that our older employees, people are more willing to go to them to ask for advice on over-the-counter medications, because I think there's a trust factor there. And it's not just the older people that go to them, but younger people go to them too. So we see that as a real benefit.
I'm going to ask you to hang on for half a second, Steve. I want to bring another guest onto the program. Anne Gorenstein worked for 20 years in systems development implementation for Unisys. She quit when she was 62. And instead of just relaxing, found herself just about as busy as when she was working, volunteering, exercise classes, time with the grandchildren. And so Anne got to thinking, why not go back to work? She's on the line now from Vienna, Virginia. Hi, Anne.
Hi there.
What's the work that you're doing now?
Well, I work as a court reporter now. I work part-time.
Now, that's not typical MBA work. Are you liking it?
Yes, I'm enjoying it very much. I find it to be stimulating. I get to meet some very interesting people, and I've learned some new technology. So for me, it's working great.
I wonder, Anne, if I had told you 20 or 30 years ago that, yes, you would retire and life would be good, but that you'd end up going back to work again. What would you have told me then?
Well, I might have told you the same thing that I'm telling you now.
Huh.
I took a few years and just did a lot of volunteer things. And then I decided, I wonder if I could get a job if I wanted one. And from there, I thought, well, I didn't want one full-time again. I knew that. And I wanted something with a lot of flexibility, and I was lucky enough to find it. And I think probably even years ago, knowing how I like to be on the go and I like to try new things out, that if you had told me that, I would have said, well, if I'm healthy, and I hope so, might very well be doing that.
I wonder if there was a part of you that wondered if you'd be welcome back in the workforce over the age of 60.
Well, I changed direction at 40 when I got the MBA.
Yeah.
And I got an MBA from an engineering school, from Rensselaer. But I didn't have an engineering background, and it took me over a year to find a job then. I think primarily because people were looking for new MBAs to be about 24 or 25, and here I was over 40. So I think I faced the ageism kind of thing at that point. And yes, I would have expected it again.
And would you mind me asking you if you went back to work because you needed the money or more because you wanted the stimulation of being back in a workforce with other adults?
No, I just wanted the stimulation. I wanted something a little different. And I knew I could continue with doing more of the volunteer things. And one that I do that's very stimulating is working with court-appointed special advocates. But I wanted to try the work for some other reason. I think mostly to see, could I do it?
Mm-hmm.
And could I get the job? And it was very satisfying that I read about one that looked interesting to me, that had the flexibility that I wanted. And I applied for it, and I was offered the job immediately.
So what's your retirement age now?
Now I'm 66.
No, what's the age that you think that you'll stop working at now?
Oh, when do I think I'll stop working now? Well, I like this part-time,
yeah.
And I like the flexibility. So I figure I would give it at least another 4 or 5 years and see at that point. And if I'm still healthy and still enjoying it, I would continue on with it.
And it's very good of you to join us on the program today.
Thank you very much.
Anne Gorenstein there on the line from Vienna, Virginia. And I'd like to bring Robert Friedland in on the program now. He is an associate professor at Georgetown University and founding director of the Center on an Aging Society. Robert, it's nice to have you with us.
Thank you.
You know, I remember some years back, it might be, 15 years ago, McDonald's got a little bit of a news splash by saying that they were bringing senior citizens, back into the workforce. And wasn't this a remarkable thing? And everybody wrote about it. And it lasted about two weeks as a news story, and everybody forgot about it. What I'm hearing and what I'm reading now sounds to me that it's something different, something bigger than that. Am I right?
I think that's right. This is the demographic shifts that are in place have been well known for a long time. And for a long time, people in this field have said, why aren't employers looking at older workers? And now, 15 years later, they are beginning to look at older workers. The CVS, Steve Wing's example is a wonderful example. But they're a pioneer. They're in this. They are very wise to take this on and to challenge the stereotypes that they've been living with, and to question the ageism that's rampant throughout the corporate America, and they'll probably profit from that.
And well, one of the interesting things that I find about it, Robert, is that it's not just making that pitch to a lifelong employee of CVS to stay past the age of 65. It's this active recruiting that we hear about at CVS and at a number of other major corporations of people who might have already left the workforce or might have done something else for 30 or 35 years. I wouldn't have thought those people would be as attractive as employees. What is it that makes them so interesting to these companies?
Well, Your previous guest, Anne, was a remarkable illustration of the spirit, the enthusiasm, the desire.
Right.
She had a very different kind of career. She brings a whole wealth of experience to the workplace, and she's applying her experience from the past, her enthusiasm, to a new opportunity. And I think that vitality is in part what they're looking for. They're looking for new application of old skills in a new situation and a desire to be there and be a part of the workplace.
I'm wondering, Steve Wing, if there's also a work ethic there that comes from years past that companies like yours can take advantage of.
Most definitely. They have the customer service skills and the you know what we find that they help the younger workers to learn that work ethic. And really, it's great because the younger folks help them with the youthfulness and the vitality, and we found it to be a good mix of having young people and older people working together. That's been a plus for us.
All right, Connection listeners, we'd like to hear your thoughts and your experience on this particular issue, that of older people returning to the workforce. Certainly, there are many people who find that economically they have to return to the workforce, but there are others who are choosing to go back. How much does benefits have to do with it? Things like health care, and how much of it has to do with just not really wanting to stop work at age 65? 1-800-423-8255. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. Dick Gordon, you're listening to The Connection this hour, a conversation about older workers returning to the workplace or staying in the workplace long past the sort of traditionally understood age of retirement at 65 or at 70. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. We'd like to have you join us. Stephen Wing is with me. He is Director of Government Programs for CVS Pharmacies. It's a company with 140,000 employees in 37 different states, and they have increased their number of elderly workers almost 2.5 times in the past 5 years. Robert Friedland is also with us from NPR in Washington. He's associate professor at Georgetown and founding director of the Center on an Aging Society. And let's go to Burlington, Vermont. Jerry is with us. Hi, Jerry.
Yeah, how are you today?
I'm fine.
I have 3 points to make. I hope you'll give me just a moment to make them.
Go ahead.
I've been working since I'm 8 years old, and I'm in my 60s now, and I have to, I would like to face, as many people have for many years now, of the possibility of retirement without having to look for garbage cans and eat cat food and so on. So I feel I saved a little bit of money, but I feel that we're sort of, everybody's making it sound so pretty here. It's not so pretty when you have to, you're old and tired. I don't quite put myself in that category, but it won't be long. And we're sort of forced back into work. And I think management really loves that because they can pay us a lower wage. And another point I want to make...
You're a business owner, though, aren't you, Jerry?
I am a business owner. Yes, I am. But it's a restaurant business, which is, I don't know if you know or not, but it's a very tenuous kind of situation to be in.
No, it's tough business. I understand that.
Yeah, you get too many snows and you get much fewer people. The other thing I'd like to bring up is what happens to jobs for young people. It's being shipped out of the country more and more. I keep hearing these things about how great it is to put prisoners to work, to outsource to another country. I'd make a joke in the restaurant that we're going to send our dishes out to be washed in India. There's just a limit to how that benefits the average person, and I don't think this much benefits anyone.
Can I ask you though about just your own retirement, Jerry? I mean, did you have an age or a date or a time picked in your mind that you've had to move off a little bit?
Well, I have moved off to some degree. But, I was kind of thinking the traditional thing, in my later 60s. And I just don't think I can do it. I actually have been homeless and on the street in my youth. And I'm not whining. Believe me, I'm not whining about this because I know that there are a lot of people in this situation. So I figure I'm one of a group of people who are being screwed.
There's a reality check in what Jerry's saying, Robert, and that is that, we shouldn't be too chirpy about this. There are a lot of people, and some of them, cleaning hotel rooms and doing other kinds of jobs like that, that require a lot of bending over, a lot of time on their feet. That's hard on them, and that's an economic part of the story, right?
Very much so. And Jerry's absolutely right. The large numbers of people over 50 that are willing to be in the labor force are, in fact, to the advantage of management to hire workers at a wage rate that's not increasing as fast as it will be for those who are younger, because there are much fewer younger people. But Jerry's absolutely right. If you need to work, as Anne didn't, apparently, then this can be very, very difficult because the work is hard. It's mostly service sector jobs. It is very people-oriented jobs, which is the benefit for the people who want to work. But for those who have to work for economic needs, this is a very tough job to hoe.
And are we seeing, Robert, just in the past, what would it be, the past 4 or 5 years since the last stock market drop, that there's been an increase in the number of people who've had to return to work because their own nest egg's not the size that it once was?
Well, I think that has caused people to delay leaving the labor force and staying in a job that they're not happy about a little longer.
Let's go to Norwell, Massachusetts. Campbell's joining us on the line from there. Hi, Campbell.
Hi. Thank you so much for being on the air. Your program is constantly interesting and challenging, and I'm just one of the millions of people that really appreciate it.
Well, thanks for that. What are you thinking today about this one?
This is a particularly interesting topic to me. I'm 55 years old. I had a very successful commercial interior design firm for 30 years. Combination of a divorce and the economy put that business out of business. And I have been looking for appropriate work for 3 years. I have applied to over 300 jobs, internet jobs that I could think of from the newspaper, any source I could find, networking. I work very hard, and I'm happy to work, and I have had incredibly few job offers. I was very fortunately hired by the Expo as a kitchen designer, and I enjoy my work very much, but I'm making 10% of what I've made for the last 30 years.
Yeah, and you might make even less than that if you took a job at Home Depot or CVS, I would suspect, right?
Yes.
And so
it's very tough, and I look to try to find my employers, the judge who is in charge of my divorce, everybody looks at me and says, you should be making $150,000 a year. Why are you only making 40? And I'll be damned if I have a good answer for that.
You know, it's worth bringing Steve Wing back in here, because this is a company which is actively recruiting older workers. And I'm wondering, Steve, if you were to take a survey of the people over 55 who are working for CVS, you'd be looking more, I would suspect, at people who are working on the floor of the pharmacy rather than people in senior managerial positions?
Well, I think you're right. I think when you look at the positions that we have, I mean, they are good positions. The folks that are in those 60, 70, 80 years of age, they're pharmacy technicians for us. They're photo lab managers. We have some pharmacists that are in their 70s that are working for us. We have managers in their 70s that are working for us. So I think the population is aging, and I think one of the things that we look at is that there's less and less younger people. So we have to find creative new ways of hiring people.
You can be more picky about who you hire from among the elderly workers? Do you have a larger pool to choose from now?
Well, I tell you what, it's difficult to find them, because a lot of times they don't think that they can that anybody will hire them.
Yeah.
So they don't come, and so that's why we use organizations like the National Council on Aging or Experience Works or AARP, because they have the pool of people that are looking for employment, and then we go to them. They help to recruit people. We tell them what we're looking for, mm-hmm. and then they let the folks that are in their organization know about the opportunities, and that has really helped us to get the right people.
I just want to go back to Campbell here, who's hanging on the phone. And Campbell, I'm wondering if at age 55, you're kind of, you know, you're not there yet. You're an older middle-aged worker rather than a younger older worker. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I seem to be having as hard a time finding a job as if I were 85.
Yeah.
It seems very challenging to me, and I would love to see the statistics. Home Depot and Expo have a wonderful resource of older people working in their stores. It's one of the things that makes it so pleasant to work there because of exactly what the gentleman from CVS was talking about, people with tremendous experience and a lot to offer.
Yeah.
But I would like to see some statistics on what percentage of the prior income that these people made they're now making working at CVS, Home Depot, or Expo.
Robert, can you help us with that?
Well, anecdotally, the answer is they're making a lot less. I mean, Campbell is facing the reality that most employers are not acting like Home Depot, Expo, or CVS. Most employers have a sense of ageism in them. They are still encouraging people in their 50s to leave with early retirement options, and they haven't seen the advantage, if you will, of retaining older workers. And that may change, and I think it will, but at the moment, Campbell's stuck in the reality that most employers don't see it that way yet.
Yeah, I was just sort of doing the math in my head. If we look at people born in 1945, we're talking about people who are going to have their 60th birthday this year. So we are really just at the leading edge of this wave of baby boomers who are coming into this space. Is that right, Robert?
That's right. It's the very beginning edge of a 20-year process. It's also the very, very beginning stage in which employers are reevaluating their labor management relationships.
Connection listeners, our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. We are taking a look this hour at a return to the workplace. People, men and women, who are 65 and older, some because they have to, some because they can't leave, some because they want to go back to work. We'd like to know where you fit in and how you take stock of this. We're going to Boston for our next call. Anthony's on the line. Hi, Anthony.
Hi, Dick. How are you doing?
Fine, thanks.
Well, I'm a psychiatrist in the Boston area with specific interest in the geriatrics population, and this is very pertinent to a lot of what we see here today. A lot of people, once they retire, they find that they have a lack of meaning in their lives, and work itself creates a lot of meaning for people's lives. It gives them a reason to get out of bed. I'm not sure if any studies have been done, but as far as the activation of people having to go to work in the morning, it has significant antidepressant effects. People just feel better about themselves.
Are you finding, Anthony, that people have to retire, leave the workforce like Anne did, before they figure out that maybe a return would be a good thing for them psychologically?
I think so. I mean, people, we have this idea in our mind that people have to retire 63, 64, 65, and then they sit around for the next 20 years wondering what to do with their lives. Mm-hmm. And it's just not a very healthy perspective. And animals, we had to fight to survive. And when you take people's fight to survive away from them to some point, it's just very destructive. People don't understand what reason they have to go on anymore. Never mind the fact that they can truly be creative members of society, that there's a large ageist perspective that people in their old age can't be productive members of society, and as well as the fact that when Social Security was created, people didn't live as long as the people are living now. People died in between 60 and 65. Now we have people living between the ages of 80 and 90 routinely, and they're retiring for 20, 30 years.
Okay, there's a lot on the table here, Anthony, and I hope that we get to some of this on the program. I want to take a part of what you said a little bit earlier and ask Steve Wing about the people who come because they're looking for stimulation or discovered after the fact that they didn't want to leave the working world. Do companies like CVS then kind of adjust their employment policy to suit someone who's 65 or 70? Say, you know, if you only want to work 3 days a week, we can figure that out.
Oh, most definitely. And I've got a good example of that. We had a lady that works for us that was owned her own marketing business. She retired at 65. She sold off her business, and she and her husband were going to travel the world. Well, 2 or 3 months into it, they saw everything they wanted to see, and she needed something to do. And she came to CVS as a part-time person, and she had such a good talents that we promoted her to shift supervisor. And a year ago, she was the reason I know her so well is because I shop in the store that she's at. Yeah. And she said that she was leaving the company. I said, "Are you leaving the company? What's going on here?" She said, "Well, they were going to move down to Florida for part of the time, and she lived in Ohio, and so she was going to go back and forth." Well, I said, "Well, we have stores in Florida. You can go down there and work there during the winter and come back up." Well, the two managers that she goes back and forth with, those two are fighting about, when they can have her, because she's done such a good job.
This really, in many ways, Robert, is turning our perception of the working world a little bit upside down.
Well, this is fantastic, and I hope many more companies can do this. This is a big part of the problem, which is that people who do leave their lifelong career or their job and do something else, they want the part-time opportunities. They want the flexibility, and not all employers can do that.
Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection. Next call from Northampton, Massachusetts. Ellen is with us. Hi, Ellen.
Hi there. I have a question about Medicare. I wonder whether employers need to pay health insurance for employees who are over 65. Of course, this could change in the next decade or so, but I wonder if your guests have any comments.
Well, that's a great one for Steve Wing. Steve, are there people who want to come back to the workforce because they get health benefits?
Most definitely. But again, I don't think you can stereotype because not everybody's looking for benefits. Some people are coming back, have pensions, and they have their health care taken care of. Others definitely are looking for the benefits. And one of the good things that we have and that we've just implemented in the last couple of years is that we have both full-time and part-time health benefits. So most companies just have full-time health benefits.
See, one of the reasons why I'm curious about this is that I don't know the statistics, but I would have thought just on the face of it that health benefits for someone who's, you know, 75 to 85 would end up costing the company or the insurance company more than someone who's 25 to 35. Am I wrong about that?
You know, something we did a survey because there's some misconceptions there. We found that the health benefits are used less with older people than they are with the younger people. So
what's behind that? Is that because of children? They don't have children at home?
Yes. Yeah. I think the biggest cost is dependents. The dependents of the people that are working, that their kids get sick, and then there's where the costs really affect the company.
1-800-423-8255. Robert, just from you, if I can, on this question of benefits, how much of a return or a decision to stay in the workforce is based on people's needing to have those benefits covered for them?
For people under 65, it's a very big part of the decision. It may be that someone has left the labor force, but their spouse is still in the labor force, and they're getting their benefits from them. But health insurance benefits are a critical part of retirement planning, and the individual market just effectively does not work if you have any chronic conditions. So people prior to age 65, prior to Medicare eligibility, are looking for benefits, but they can get it sometimes through a spouse who might be working even though they are not working full-time.
Now, Steve, I know you have to go. I've got one more quick question for you, and that is just how far do you think this is going to go? If you've got 17% of your employees now classified as older workers, how high do you think that'll go?
We don't really have any estimates of what we see. We're looking for good people, I think, number one.
Yeah.
And working with the agencies, we're finding them. So like I said before, I wouldn't be surprised to see that within the next 10 years that we'll see people in their hundreds working and doing it because they want to. And I think of all the things that you said today, I really appreciate you having a program like this because it makes a lot of difference when other companies hear what's happening and that word needs to get out there. So we really appreciate you having this kind of a program so that the word gets out that there are companies that are friendly to mature workers and that are really looking for them to come to work for the company and in good jobs, too.
Steve, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Steve Wing, Director of Government Programs for CVS Pharmacies. And he's right. There are a number of corporations that have reassessed their policies and are actively recruiting older workers. There are companies like Borders, Home Depot, MetLife, Walgreens, CVS. 1-800-423-8255 is our number. We'd like to hear your thoughts on this shift in the working world as companies go after older people. Does that mean you as a younger person might have a harder time finding a job, or is that a risk we should be talking about? I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. I'm Dick Gordon. This hour we're asking why there is a move back to the workforce among elderly Americans. Are most people being forced back to work because of economic circumstances, or are they stuck in a job because they don't have enough money saved for their retirement? Is it health care, or are people just finding that retirement's a little bit boring? 1-800-423-8255. Robert Friedland is with us. He has worked as an economist on staff at the U.S. Bipartisan Commission on Comprehensive Health Care and as a director of AARP's Public Policy Institute. He's now founding director of the Center on an Aging Society. He's joining us from NPR in Washington. 1-800-423-TALK is the number to join us. Next to Iowa City, Iowa, and Eric's with us. Hi, Eric.
Hi. I was just calling to let you know that to represent the 37-year-old Generation X demographic, my parents are about 4 years into retirement, and I've for many years just known that there will be no such thing as retirement for me, kind of a combination of not having any savings, not making very much money in a human services career.
Well, please hang up.
Eric, we seem to have lost you there, but I want to actually, I think we got enough, Robert, of what Eric was saying here to I mean, this puts it into the sphere of Social Security, and you know, am I going to have that little nest egg to retire with? I mean, certainly people are hearing this from the president. It's hard, I guess, to separate what we're talking about here from the debate over what's to become with Social Security.
Absolutely, and I hope Eric will try and continue to save, even if it's a little amount. And not because I don't think Social Security will be there for him. I actually do think it will be there for him. But he should not view Social Security as his source of retirement only. He needs to save. That's always been true. But Social Security has helped in a sense. We, you know, starting this conversation, we wouldn't have had this conversation 50 years ago or certainly even before that. This is a very modern development. This is a modern creation, this whole concept of retirement, and Social Security has made it possible in conjunction with our living longer because people can collect benefits at age 62.
So if we just stay with the history for half a second here, I mean, our great-grandparents didn't have the expectation that they would retire at 65 and have that, you know, timeshare in Yuma, Arizona with golf course there. I understand that. But when we look at what Social Security is providing for people who are contemplating retirement now, it's ended up being, and I don't know if it's by default or by intent, it's given them the security to make that choice, has it not?
It has. Unfortunately, there is a reality that is depressing. That is, far too many people are totally dependent on Social Security, and it should not have been that way. They should have been trying to save. I know how difficult that can be, but they miss the message that they need to take care of saving on their own. They need to find companies that are providing pensions and participate in those plans. But Social Security has enabled a whole generation of people to live independently, mm-hmm. without having to move in with their parents. Eric's parents are probably not going to have to move in with him because of Social Security.
Yeah, this whole sort of fractured family thing, the fact that grandparents in many cases don't even live in the same city as their grandchildren or their children. I wonder if that's a part of their decision to return to work, because the family connections that you would think would be a bit of a preoccupation for them aren't there. Too much travel's involved.
Well, I'm not sure about that, because travel is easier than it used
That's
to be.
True,
and
yeah.
And I think the bigger issue is that the people have begun to realize this transformation that has occurred, which is that we are entering our 60s. Most of us are entering our 60s in very good health, and we can live a long time. And what are we going to do with that time? Mm-hmm. And so I think it is more driven by the question of what is the meaning of this period of time in our lives. And I think visiting grandchildren and being a part of their lives is a part of it. But for some, that's not enough.
And what do you think 5, 10, 15 years retirement will mean? Will it mean that people will take a job that might where they might have to work 2 or 3 days a week or 3 or 4 days a week, or they'll take a job where there is that flexibility that allows them to, you know, go off to a warmer climate for for a month or two? Are we at the cusp of some kind of genuine shift in the way that we understand coming to those older years?
We are at a cusp. What will happen is hard for me to assess. I think a lot of it will depend on how easy it is. If you have been working in the labor market, you've been watching, and you're conscious of the fact that 40-year-olds and 50-year-olds have trouble getting jobs, then you may be suspicious that there's ageism out there. And so you may be a little reluctant. If your own employer can't make the provisions to keep you on a part-time basis, you're going to have to find someone else, and your job skills may not be worth as much. So if you can find an employer who can adapt a schedule for you and has enough of an interesting work for you, then I think we will see a transformation, we will look back and say this was the beginning of a new a way to talk about retirement. But it's hard to know how that's going to play out, because I think there is a reluctance on the part of people of getting rejected. And there's a reluctance on the part of many employers to hire older workers still. And so I think it will really depend on whether that climate really shows itself to be different.
One thing I was going to ask, Eric, and I'll ask you quickly before we go back to our other callers, is should younger people wonder if they're now going to be competing against people who are 30, 40 years older than them and discover that, in fact, they're a less attractive employee than someone who's got that work ethic and experience and all the things that Stephen was talking about?
I think if they don't have skills, the answer is they should be concerned about that. That is, that they will be competing. They will be competing with older workers who have much more experience and skills, who are competing for the same relative kinds of jobs. But if they have technical skills or other advanced skills, I think they will be in the driver's seat, because there will be relatively few of them. And I think instinctively employers will look to younger people, because there's a better chance they'll stay on longer.
Let's go to Charles, who's joining us now on the phone from Lowville, New York. Charles, thanks for calling.
Yes, sir. I enjoy your program every day.
I appreciate that.
My comment is, and I wish your guests would comment on this, unless you have a fairly good income from these part-time jobs, when you deduct what you lose from Social Security and what you have to pay in income tax, you have to have a fairly substantial job in order to make it attractive to get back in the labor force, even if you wish to.
It's a great point, Charles. Have you done this kind of math in your own circumstances? Have you looked at it?
Yes, I have. And I have a fairly nice retirement, and I'd like to get in the workforce. But, you know, unless I could make, you know, $12, $15 an hour, it wouldn't be worth it.
Well, you might actually end up losing money in the long run, right?
That's correct. And especially if you have to buy clothes and
transportation
and that type of thing. So unless it's a fairly substantial job, it's hardly worth it, even if one wished to get into this.
Robert, what would you say to Charles on this?
Well, I think Charles is right. There's another point, too, that very often if you're in the same company, you will not be able to collect your pension without leaving that company. The company can't pay you a pension and also hire you under current law. So as I said earlier, it is, and Charles is absolutely right, it's got to be worth it. It's got to be easy to do. And so people are working not for the money, but for the stimulation. But those who need to work for the money, Charles is absolutely right.
And does that mean that there needs to be a change in government policy so people like Charles and others can be encouraged to find that work without saying, I'm losing by doing this?
Right. Well, I think some of the changes have already occurred in Social Security, but I do believe that we need to look hard at the pension laws that prohibit people from collecting their pension and staying with their employer.
1-800-423-8255. Next to Louisville, Kentucky, Norma's on the line. Hi, Norma. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I've been listening to your program, and I'm very excited about it. Also, I thought I'd put in my 2 cents worth. I'll be 83 in June. And since I'd never been old before, I didn't know what the game plan was, and I had the herd mentality and followed my family to Florida when I retired.
How long ago was that, Norma?
Let me see. I was 1988.
Okay.
And I went there, and the first winter was great, sunsets and seashells. And the second winter I went, it was horrible, and somebody found out I was down there, and I'm a legal interpreter for the deaf, and they needed me in Fort Myers. I couldn't wait. I ran to the closet and thought, what'll I wear in court? Shorts, you know, and I found a dress with a sweater, and I ran into court, and I knew then I need to come home. So I came back here to Louisville, and I'm working in Kentucky and Indiana as a legal interpreter for the deaf and mentoring other interpreters, and I'm telling you, there's the fountain of youth. Hang around with young people.
And you were finding that that kind of company you were keeping in Florida was not the sort of stimulation you wanted?
No, it was always like, oh, guess who's got cancer? Or somebody would say, I'll see you Thursday for lunch, God willing. It was, to me, it was God's waiting room, and I didn't want to be there anymore. I needed to get back here to Kentucky, and I'll just keep going until I physically can't.
Can I ask you, Norma, when you look at your circumstances and compare yourself to what your friends are doing, are they going, Norma, you're crazy. You should be, you know, playing bridge with us beachside here.
Yes, it almost gets to be that I want to avoid people because they keep yelling at me and saying, you're working way too hard. You shouldn't be doing this. We never have time for lunch, yada, yada, yada. And I said, but I'm doing what I love, and I will find time for lunch with you, just not a whole lot of times. It's when I go to the doctor, I say to her, is this a geezer ache or is this something to worry about? Because I don't know what it's like to be old. And then she will fall in with me and say, this is a geezer ache, forget that. This we're concerned about, we'll run a test on that. So it's a whole new world for us. We don't know what it's like to be old. And when we get there, we're fumbling around. And I'm just really glad that I can be fumbling in a good way, keep active, and then sort the other stuff out.
How many
but my
hour-
friends do nag me.
How many hours a week are you working, Norma, ballpark here?
Oh, let me see. It all depends on the cases. If they run, like, all day long, then it would be... I usually get called out about 3 days a week, which is perfect.
I know why your friends are bugging you. They can't keep up with you.
That's right. I think they just want me for lunch because I'm the entertainment factor.
They're jealous. That's what it is.
That's the ticket.
Thank you.
That's it.
Thank you for calling.
And thank you for having this program.
Well, Robert, we have our poster child for the show here.
Well, Norma is clearly a pioneer, and in fact, her whole generation is a pioneer. They are actually helping us, who aren't there yet, define what we mean by retirement.
And, you know, when I think back to something that Steve said about having people, you know, 90 and at or close to 100 years old working in CVS, there was a part of me that wanted to go, aren't you pushing them a little bit? And then yet when I listened to Norma's enthusiasm and sort of bright presentation, I'm thinking to myself, who am I to make that kind of judgment, right?
That's right. But I want to include in the reality that Steve is not hiring people who are chronically ill in a very serious way, who are unhealthy, and there are many people over 75 who are very unhealthy.
Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection. Next call from Central Louisiana. MJ's with us. Hi, MJ. Thanks for calling.
Good morning.
What do you think?
I live in southeast Texas. We have a large community there of people who are over age 40. Unfortunately, most of them have to work for a living, you know, to put food on a table to pay rent.
Yeah.
The jobs that most of them have available are those that pay only minimum wage, or the employer limits the number of hours they can work to such that they can't pay the bills. Now, the result for this is you either starve to death or you get creative. I'm lucky. I'm 54. I was able to start a little business. It's not doing well, but it does put food on the table. But what do you do? I'm one of those who worked 20 years in an industry that had no benefits, didn't pay worth a squat. We have no retirement to look forward to, and now even Social Security is in question. What are we supposed to do, starve?
MJ, I'm gonna have Robert answer you, but I want to just... So ask one question quick before I turn that to Robert. When you look at your decision to stop work, how much are you relying on Social Security? How much will you rely on it?
with respect to me, I'm probably going to work to the day I meet my maker. I don't believe there's going to be any amount of Social Security at this point where I of age at right now to be able to retire. I couldn't even pay my rent with it. So I would have to rely heavily on Social Security.
And Robert, when MJ and the other and others who've talked about the reliability of Social Security raise that question, are they right to raise that question?
Well, I think they're right to ask that question, and I think it's important to have a dialogue about what the situation is with Social Security. I don't think he has to be as worried as he sounds about Social Security, but he does have to worry because Social Security isn't going to be a lot of money. I mean, he is going to collect Social Security. Let me just say that the trustees report just came out yesterday, and you know, it's either in trouble in the next 20 years or it's not in trouble at all. There's quite a range, and there's a lot of things that can be done, and I know there's a discussion about that. But even when it's insolvent, that is, even if we hit the point where it's insolvent, most of the benefits will still be being paid. So
you know, there's a key part of this here, though, that MJ has brought up. And MJ, I want to come back to you on this if I can. And we're right near the end of the program, so I'll ask you to be brief, and I'll try to be quick myself here. But, you know, everybody's waving their finger at people as they're getting older, saying, you got to save for your retirement. You're talking about a lot of people who, it sounds like, don't have jobs that even allow them to make that kind of saving.
Well, see, that's where I've been most of my life. I spent 20 years in a career where we didn't make enough money to even put 5% or even 1% away. There is absolutely nothing there in the coffers, and we have no choice, and I'm not alone. You know, there are people that didn't save through bad saving habits, sure, but for the most part, what I've run into were people who worked their tail ends off their entire lives for a minimum wage and have their hands full just keeping food on the table.
MJ, I want to thank you for being with us on the program. It's nice to hear that point of view.
Thank you. I'll be listening more to you.
And Robert Friedland, I think that's probably a smart way to end that when we take into account that we're dealing with people at all different parts of the economic spectrum here, and none of the rules apply to everyone. I want to thank you for being with us, Robert.
Thank you.
Robert is Associate Professor and Founding Director of the Center on an Aging Society at Georgetown University. Earlier in the program, we talked with Ann Gorenstein, retired manager for Unisys, and Stephen Wing, Director of Government Programs for CVS Pharmacies. You can find out more about our program at theconnection.org. We had help today from Matt Odette and John Parati. Our senior producers, Tara Murphy. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.